is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud. Well, I think the first thing in order is to wish everybody a beautiful season, whatever season you're celebrating. But Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays to all. This is it's a time of year to reflect back on our successes this past year and what's ahead in store. I love this time of year because we get to do it all over again as we get into a new year, people. And it's going to be an interesting year for a lot of reasons. But also, I think a lot of us have been looking forward to just the idea mentally of 2020. Let's see if we can get clear vision finally in America, huh? 2020, huh? Should be a beautiful thing, people, here. Lots of news here to talk about here. Of course, the political clash in Washington, which I am not going to bore you all with the massive details of this impeachment deal all for the next hour. We will talk about it, but it's not going to be our only focus, people. We've got the Horowitz report coming quickly. The economy is a massive story that has major ramifications for everybody listening here. You see some of these shootings that are happening that are off the charts here. Also, NATO, big NATO meeting in London this past week, and I want to talk about America on the world stage. We have a special segment on that coming up later in the program. And then, are we safe? Criminal justice reform. We'll talk about that as well. Let's get started here, friends, with the top stories. And we'll do that with three patriots here. Lieutenant Joseph Pangaro joins us. He's a retired police lieutenant, director of school security, and host of Chasing Justice here on America Out Loud. Jim McKay is here. He's a political analyst, commentator, radio producer here at America Out Loud. Ilana Friedman. Ilana's a veteran intelligence analyst, a political commentator, and host of the Friedman Report right here on America Out Loud. All right, so this is what I call a historic political clash here, guys, with this whole, I call it Pelosi versus Trump. And, of course, this is, you know, we've been seeing Pelosi's conversation here like she wasn't going to do this without bipartisan teamwork. I mean, you're going to impeach a president. You've got to have both sides of the political aisle in step here. We're not seeing that right now, clearly. Lieutenant Pangaro, let me go to you first here. One of the most interesting things I think about this, and I think a lot of people are waiting for the other shoe to drop, is that so far, thus far, at least right at this moment, could change any second, Joe, but the Republicans have stayed together. We don't normally see that with this crew. They don't usually play that as well as the left. What's up and what's behind that, Joe?
Well, Malcolm, I think the clearest thing, the reason that the Republicans are hanging together at this point is because this inquiry was so one-sided, so biased, so inappropriate, that I think to do anything less than that would be to join into that that fraud. Because we saw hidden basement hearings. They cherry-picked the statements they wanted. When we saw these four experts, Jonathan Turley's the only one who is not a Trump supporter, and he came out and said the process is completely inappropriate. But they're going with it anyway. This is when you're saying that it's, you know, Pelosi versus Trump, it's actually Pelosi and these Democrats versus the people of the United States. This is a betrayal of our Constitution. This is a betrayal of our way of life to do it this way. If he did something wrong, go after him. And if he deserves impeachment, that's the penalty for doing the wrong thing. But to have a one-sided, lopsided attack like this is damaging our entire system from here on out.
Yeah. Well, you know, Pangaro, we are living in historical moments of time, and we are seeing it play out right here. This is something we'll be talking about for a long time to come, very much here. Ilana Friedman, the interesting thing about this is, if the big question is for everybody is, if this gets to the Senate, first of all, do they impeach him out of the House, and then does it get to the Senate? And then from there, what do you think happens, Ilana?
I think Pelosi has really put her foot in it this time. She is bound and determined to get Trump. This is like the gunfight at OK Corral. I, I, I've never seen anything like it. She's contradicting herself because she was once against impeachment, as was Adam Schiff, by the way. They have all said when it was Clinton who was on the block, they were against impeachment. And all of their answers, all their reasons were the same as what the Republicans are saying now. Now Pelosi has unequivocally said that the facts are undisputed. Well, of course, she's dead wrong. Everything about this case is disputed. I think that they know that if they cannot bring him down before the election, they will not be able to beat him at the ballot box, and that scares the hell out of them.
Pangaro, I want to talk to you a moment here, specifically about Horowitz. We are at the verge of the Horowitz report coming down the pike here now. We'll have it in the next day or so. And interestingly enough, and I guess everybody's wondering, Joe, I mean, straight out, do we get excuses from the Horowitz report or do we get recommendations for indictment?
My concern all along, and I've told my Chasing Justice audience this, is that I'm hoping for the best from Mr. Barr and his team. The Horowitz report, I am afraid it's going to come out and find a lot of blame, a lot of problems, a lot of things that went wrong, but not enough to go after anyone. I don't think there's going to be that moment that we say, okay, this is how we can put an end to this kind of nonsense by holding people directly accountable. The things that have leaked out so far where they're saying, well, there seems to be a reasonable explanation for why the investigation was started. That's twisting precedent. No, we've never done this before, investigating candidates for office and then going after them afterwards. If that is not held to account, I don't know how this finds any justice for anyone. And I'm afraid the report's going to do that. It's going to name some lower level people. It's going to say these things were inappropriate, but there's no one we can prosecute because they've had a chance to take a bite out of Jim Comey and they declined. These other people, they may be, well, there might be a referral and they'll decline. We need to see people held to account. And I hope that my interpretation is wrong of what I'm seeing coming.
Yeah, I hope it is as well, Joe. But I got to tell you, I'm getting a lot of comments and thoughts from experts here on the platform that play to what you're saying right there. Others are saying that Horowitz is going to be a setup for John Durham. In other words, that will put the frosting on the cake. I don't know that a lot of people have confidence at this point of what's going to happen because nobody's paid a price up to this point. Everybody's freewheeling. These are the days of Bonnie and Clyde right out in the mid public square now. You can do anything you want to do, when you want to do it, how you want to do it, and nobody's paying a price for anything. Not exactly a good precedent to set here, people, for the future, is it now, you know? Well, listen, one of the biggest stories here we have is, make no mistake about it, people, the United States economy, the record numbers that are being produced. It's beyond words that you can actually say. You know, I talk to you all the time about American exceptionalism. I talk to you about the great American people and the might of this nation. And I'll repeat that again to you today. But I got to tell you what, proof is in the pudding here. As the world is really tightening their belt and hurting badly, the United States is putting up numbers like you've never seen before in your life here. So, what are the numbers right now? How about 266,000 new jobs, 54,000 manufacturing jobs? Those are those manufacturing jobs that would never come back again, as you recall, people, yeah? The unemployment rate, 3.5%. And the wage growth, this is incredible and impeccable. 3.1% wage growth, and that's happening to mostly lower and middle class Americans. How do you say hallelujah, people? Exactly. And that would make a better holiday for everybody with more money in their pocket than economic numbers like these. Now, what I want to do is I want to play this quick audio for you, and I'm going to go back to somebody who said this would never, ever happen. Listen to this, please.
Because some of those jobs of the past are just not going to come back.
Another big jobs report, the U.S. economy adding 263,000 jobs in April, the unemployment rate sinking to a 49-year low.
Wow.
He's going to bring all these jobs back. Well, how exactly are you going to do that? What are you going to do? There's no answer to it.
The second quarter GDP growth is impressive, 4.1%.
He just says, well, I'm going to negotiate a better deal. Well, how exactly are you going to negotiate that? What magic wand do you have? And usually the answer is, He doesn't have an answer.
Check out that unemployment rate, 3.6%, continues to move lower. Wow. We are now at a 49-year low on the unemployment rate.
All right, so you hear that, Jim McKay, and you see that former President Obama says that where's the magic wand, that it would require a magic wand and that this would never happen. Of course, this goes part and parcel that we've been sending manufacturing jobs overseas for many, many years now, many administrations as well. But you hear the words from the former president, yet that is exactly what's happening now. So is it safe to say that President Trump has a magic wand, McKay?
I think so. I think one of the things is the spirit of America. If you look at the consumer confidence level, it's off the board. It's so high. We're a consumer spending economy. Now manufacturing is getting back into the act. And one of the things they missed in the numbers got hidden in the mud, so to speak, is the federal deficit was projected by Office of Budget Management, the OMB, to be $1.2 trillion-plus for the year. Came in at under $980 billion, over $200 billion less than forecast. This is where Trump had said, if we get the growth, if we get the economy rolling, the tax cut and everything is a jump starter. We're going to reduce the deficit by growth. And it's happening.
Yeah. And McKay, that is a great thing for you to bring up. That is perfect because, nobody really is talking about that. Of course, it's still evil. I mean, $980 billion is an evil number. But you're right. It's far better than $1.2 trillion. And we've been trekking over $1 trillion now in this deficit, adding to it constantly here as we now have gone over the $23 trillion mark here. There's going to be a price to pay for this down the road. There's no doubt about it here. I want to stay with you a moment, Jim, and I want to talk to you about, and this is big now. Everybody listen to what I tell you now. This is big. So there's another government potential shutdown coming on December 20th. And this would be right before the red fat suit guy comes down the chimney there, Jim. And would be a hell of a Merry Christmas for some, potentially. And we'll have no budget, and which is what Congress has been playing along this game for a long time now. They'll need another CR, which the president just signed again last month, which I suggested he not sign. Now we're going to be in the same position again. Now the stakes are lining up very interestingly with the feud with Pelosi and Trump. And of course, the parties are not working together. They're only working on impeaching the president. What happens, and the president has gone along with this farce. That's even after saying over the last couple of years he would never sign another CR again. And the president has gone back on his commitment to that. And we can argue why, Jim, all day long. Well, he had to. Well, he could. Well, I mean, I get all that. I get it. But at what point do you say, uncle, or I've had enough of this crazy game here, and bring these politicians to their knees finally?
I think the time is now. I think with facing the Pelosi wants a House vote on impeachment on Christmas Eve. Is that ironic? It's nuts. And the CR, the budget deadline is December 20th. I think Trump should put his foot in the ground, stomp down, and say, this is it. I'm not signing another one. Then let him, the do-nothing Congress that doesn't have a budget, let them go in with impeachment, close the government down. I don't care. I think, when I look at it, over 3 years of CRs, and well, we've had CRs in the way we've been doing business for 50 years. That's we've right. only had a budget four times in 50 years. Can you believe that?
That's insane. It's insane.
And to me, that's a requirement of the Constitution. That, to me, is an impeachable offense. That's something I would, if you could, like the British government or some of the other governments, close down Congress, start over with them, because they're just so irresponsible. Mm-hmm. And that, $23 trillion in debt. We've never had a budget in 50 years. I can't believe it.
Yeah, no, it's well said. When you say the president should put his foot down, and I will say to all three of you there and all of our listeners, do you think he should put his foot down, or should he put it up somebody's ass, do you think, Jim?
That would be
you don't have to answer that. So, Ilana Friedman, on that setup there, that would be quite a visual, wouldn't it, Ilana? But all right, talk to me about this CR. You say, did he really say that? Yeah, he really said that. Okay, Ilana, your view. Now, Jim says some pretty, I've never heard Jim say what he just said. And Jim is an economic guy. He follows all this stuff to a T. And he messaged to me the other day about that, and I was shocked. And so I think the question is, should the president sign the CR? Does the budget go forward? I mean, like I said, they're looking to impeach him before Christmas. What do you think?
Last week, the president indicated that he might not go along with another CR. He said, I wouldn't commit to anything. It depends on what the negotiations are. And that means that he is absolutely depending on Congress to either come through and give him something to work with, or he will not sign it. And I think that's a pretty good idea. I agree with Jim completely. I would like to see if Congress cannot get their act together in the next few days, I would like to see the government shut down, and it will reflect on them.
Well, there it is, people. So it's just going to be an interesting moment. It really, I'm telling you, the cards are stacking up very interestingly for an absolute historic fight, not just here at the end of the year, but moving forward right into 2020 with all that's going to be said and done. It is going to be really something else here. In fact, when we come back this time next year, it's going to be even more interesting to see where the nation is a year from now, which we'll know who the new president is going to be for the next 4 years. And we'll know a lot more at that point, too, if anybody has been locked up. Wow. I wish I had a crystal ball and I could tell you all that answer right now here. Listen, there have been a lot of horrific shootings here in the past many days and weeks here. Unbelievable. Lieutenant Joe Panguero, I want to talk to you about this. We had murders at the Pearl Harbor Naval Station and the Pensacola Naval Air Station as well. A gunman killed three people and injured several others in Pensacola, which was the latest there. This is on top of, my God, just last couple of weeks, we had the Walmart shooting in Oklahoma. We have people hijacking UPS trucks and shooting people in the intersections. What the hey is going on, Pinkero?
Well, the phenomenon of this public violence, terrorist attacks, because I think we're looking at the Pensacola-based attack as probably terrorist-inspired. When I talk about workplace violence and these active shooter situations everywhere, we're seeing a decay of our society, and we're seeing the bigger picture of sometimes, even though economically we're doing very well, but all this consternation in our country, this pain back and forth, this hatred, people boiling over in the streets, and we still have not addressed the mental health issues that we have in our country. It's a taboo. We don't go after it. There were two kids in schools in Wisconsin within 2 weeks of each other that had weapons in school. We talked about this on Chasing Justice. The kid pulls the gun on a cop and didn't pull the trigger. Is that suicide by cop? I think we all have to understand that the potential for this violence is everywhere and at all times. And I don't know that we're taking enough precautions. We're not taking it seriously enough. It's hard to say that to the people who are surviving it. But I think the reality is we need to look closer at the mental health situation and deal with that and not be afraid to enforce law, go after people. When you let everyone feel like they can get away with anything, people are going to do things.
The one thing that we're going to be looking closely at, obviously, is the one in Pensacola with the Saudi nationalists. That's a real problem here. And that's something we're going to dig deeper into coming this week, friends, on the Voice of a Nation here. We'll talk more about these shootings and certainly more about what we are just talking about here. I don't know. Something's got to be cleaned up here. And certainly with our military bases here. I mean, we got to do something here. Ilana, we would be amiss not to talk about our favorite puppet across the ocean there, and that is Kim Jong-un. He is promising an early Christmas gift for America, and he also is back to calling President Trump a dotard, not a retard, but a dotard. And so what's happened to that love affair where they met on the line there in North Korea, South Korea, and were hugging each other, and what's going on there?
I think Kim is a spoiled child in a man's body. He wants everything his way. So when Trump reached out to him, he was basking in the moment. But when Trump didn't give him what he wanted, which was particularly in the area of nuclear diplomacy, he threatened to lift his moratorium on nuclear and long-range missile tests. And so Trump spoke about him, his feelings were hurt, so he called him Rocket Man. And now, at the end of November, they fired off two short-range missile projectiles. And these, what they call super large multiple rocket launchers, I think, I haven't seen the details, I think they're MIRVs. And that means that they have multiple warheads on a single missile that can be fired independently at different targets. And that's a very, very serious thing that they were working on. I reported on that back way back in 2013. But I knew they were working on it with Iran. But this is something that is very, very serious, and we really do need to watch, because this man is completely unstable and unreliable.
You know, Ilana, and you know what comes to my mind as you say all of that right there, as the world is kind of just going along with this and thinking like everything's fine. And, you know, as you say, the man is unstable to begin with, number one. And as all this is happening here, you know, we're distracted with all of this nonsense back home here. In other words, we don't have our friends, foes, and everybody lined up appropriately, and we're not exerting the energy really where it belongs. And so, yeah, you're right. We need to be paying attention. Yeah, you're right. And President Trump needs to be really looking at, yeah, you're right. But what are we to do about it when they're trying to, you know, excavate him from office and all of the political power and capital out of Washington, D.C. is being spent on foolish games? And it is time for the American people to stand up and say, enough of this nonsense. You work for us. We put you in office. We'll take you the hell out of there. That's simply said, people. Listen, there's a lot more on all these stories. I could go on for hours here, but we only have the 1 hour here with you on Viewpoint. Big thank you to these three beautiful people here, Lieutenant Joe Panguero, Jim McKay, Ilana Friedman. Oh, wow. As we continue to get warmed up, people, let's talk next a little bit about NATO, America on the world stage. What is our reputation around the world? How are they perceiving Trump? What kind of work is he doing? You've seen the crazy video that went viral out of NATO. You've seen some of the other talk. We'll take that up, friends, as Viewpoint rolls on.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. Let's talk about NATO and America on the world stage and how President Trump is impacting all of that here. We'll do that with Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, philosopher, patriot, focuses on asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Tim Alders joins us. Tim, if you've heard him on the program before, you know that I always refer to him as Mr. Constitution. He is a constitutionalist. He's a former talk radio host out on the Pacific Coast, and always good to have Tim on as well as Dennis. You know, it's not lost on me that he has also bought his brand of politics, or his brand of how he deals with people, to the world stage. And he's done this where he's holding people accountable. And of course, a lot of these people don't like it. When you see this, they're not liking the kickback they're getting. Remember now, he forced NATO to pay more. He talked about all that. Tim, let me have you opine first on this here, because I don't know what your thoughts are on this, but I think the way Trump is handling world leaders is a significant story. And, you know, some people will argue it and say it's an embarrassment to the country, but what is your view on it?
My view on it goes back to the original Constitution. We weren't supposed to bow down to any other nation. I've always wanted us to pull out of the UN and NATO because they take too much power and they want to run the world. And Donald Trump stands against that, and they hate him. They hate him as much as our own Republicans and our own Democrats here in America. He doesn't play their brand of ball, and they don't know what to do with him, so they make fun of him. Because he is standing against something that we should have never been part of in this world, in this generation anyway.
Tim, Tim, you remember when he was talking up front about, you're so right with what you say there about NATO and United Nations. You remember when he was questioning that, like even through the campaign and then early on in the presidency, and everybody was like aghast. They were like, what? Oh, this guy's a fool. He wants to what with NATO and United? These are like godly organizations. Why would he talk this way? This guy is a screwball. Do you remember all that?
Oh, I remember it all. And people are mad at him now for doing exactly what he said he was going to do. And, you know, you look at the original reason NATO came about after World War II to treat prisoners well. It's grown so much past that. It has grown into where they want this one world government. And Trump's saying, wait, hey, slow down. We don't want that in America because we like our constitutional republic. You guys stick with your socialism and shut up and stay out of America. So they try to paint him as some crazy little guy who doesn't know what he's doing. He knows exactly what he's doing. He's doing exactly what he said he'd do.
And what we elected him to do. You know, Dennis, the wow, the opening remarks from Tim. I didn't know what he would say, but I'm pleased to hear him say it. I knew it would be striking. You know, Dennis, the thing about these organizations is, again, a lot of this comes back to President Trump being a patriot, being an American, being what they would say. Well, they've made, of course, the word nationalist a dirty word. So you kind of can't even use that word in PC circles. You know that. I mean, oh, my God. You know, the visions come to your mind right away and it ain't gingerbreads dancing. But, you know, he's a more of that, a nationalist than a globalist. And that sort of is a poison to these people, these power seekers that want to put America on a globalist path here. But he was really ridiculed for United Nations and NATO. I think I'll tell you what, I think the NATO members, when you look at what just happened in London, I think is part and parcel proof in the pudding, Dennis, of what he's doing on the world stage, making them all accountable. Playing his brand of politics. Pretty amazing stuff, isn't it?
You see the videos that are trying to make a mockery of not just him, but the other leaders as well. And that's cover, because that's cover by the NATO establishment. You know, it's kind of like the deep state here. And the NATO establishment is a big bureaucracy too. And it's got mission creep up the wazoo at this point. They want to be into everything all over the planet. Cyber security is like a threat to NATO. You know, it's like everything at this point that goes boo is some sort of dire threat to the alliance is the way that they try to put things down. And Trump doesn't believe that. And to tell you the truth, neither do some of the other leaders of the other big NATO countries. France's Emmanuel Macron does not believe that either. I mean, you know, he's the guy that was the big rabble rouser in London. He's the one that has been going around for the last year going that the NATO establishment is brain dead. And he's the one that forced them to have to reevaluate what their strategic mission is in the next year and come back to them with recommendations, because basically, world leaders are a little bit fed up with this thing running on automatic, because the world has changed. They understand it's changed. Trump understands that it's changed. Macron understands that it's changed. Merkel is beginning to actually understand that it's changed. And so those are like three of the four big powers in the NATO alliance. Basically, mm-hmm. Their leadership is going, hey, time out. You kind of got a deep state problem going there too. Brussels runs on very much automatic. The big report coming out of Brussels after the end of the summit was, oh, thank God, the leaders are gone and we can go back to doing what we were doing.
You see, Macron, you're right. He called them brain dead. I mean, let's focus on that a moment here. The words brain dead. He refers to NATO as that. What I find ironic, it should not be lost on anybody. Early on again in the Trump presidency, Trump called out again NATO in a very interesting way. And everybody was alarmed by that. Now, what I found interesting, Tim, in this last go-around in London, is that Trump was celebrating NATO. He was celebrating all of these people for the work they were doing. And it was kind of the direct opposite of his approach a couple of years ago and sort of was in the face. I'm wondering, Tim, do you think he was doing that because Macron had called them brain dead? Because it's funny how the cards all changed in that game. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you know, Trump is a strategist. Sure. Trump knows what will bug people, and he plays to that. And it irritates people because you never know what Trump you're going to get. Here, you had somebody else stepping out saying all these people are brain dead in NATO, And Trump's just having fun with it. He's like, see what I started. Trump is very strategic in what Trump does. And when Trump gets other people involved in making a mockery of something, he sits back and smiles as the ringmaster. And he is very good at orchestrating what he wants to do. And he wants to stir up people questioning the status quo. Yeah. And he has that happening now. So he's like, hey, I'm going to sit back and just tell him, hey, you know, you guys are great. Because they never know what they're getting from Trump.
What you say there is so important, Tim, that, again, I don't think a lot of people really truly understand. I mean, I think patriots get it and his supporters get what you just said. But I don't think the vast majority of people really understand what you just said. And Dennis, that really goes back to what Tim puts out there is the secret card that Trump is always holding, because you really don't know. He plays things out. Again, he's a strategist. In fact, Colonel Warshak says that all the time on the platform. He plays 10-level chess as everybody else is playing checkers. And so that means that you just don't know. You have to connect the dots and understand, why is he doing that again? And what's that really all about?
There are very big issues that have to be looked at, particularly with NATO, right? You know, so what's the big issue with NATO when you really think about it? Well, NATO's been expanding to the east, okay? And now the big thing that they talked about at the NATO summit is that they still think Russia is a big threat. Or Brussels does, and they want to establish a rapid reaction conventional military force to be able to go fight and defend Poland, which is to the east of the Fulda Gap, which is where we used to set up all these wars. And so the NATO establishment basically, we want to do that. We want to confront the Russians. The Russians basically don't have the money to build another conventional army because those things are very, very expensive, right? So Putin has said basically, oh, I'm going to build intermediate nuclear weapons, and I'm going to basically sit back here and go, like, I don't want to build a tank army because I don't have the money for that. But I do have the money to build a few missiles and tell you guys that if you bring your tank army over, we'll shoot them with these things, and because it's cheaper for us, right? So the dynamic of what's going on in the confrontation between NATO, which is now expanded to include many countries of the Warsaw Pact, and the Russians, it's becoming nonsensical because Poland is about the worst place that you want to have one of these conventional wars in. It's a disaster area. It's at the crossroads of everything. You don't want a saber rattle. And the leaders of the nations of NATO are starting to ask the question, why are we rattling sabers when we don't have to? We've been trying to economically couple with these guys for a while. Yeah, we got some difficult points to work, particularly with the Ukrainians, because, you know, that's been a policy difference. The Trump administration has been trying to work with the Russians more than the Ukrainians. The Obama administration tried to work with the Ukrainians more than the Russians. And so that's kind of the game that's being played now. It turns out that the French and the Germans are now trying to play with the Russians more than the Ukrainians. So things are shifting in NATO, and the NATO military establishment is not keeping up with what they're doing.
That's a good point. It's a good observation. Tim, what are your thoughts about Russia there? Specifically, they have become the big bad boogeyman. We've isolated them. A lot of the world has isolated them, and they've become the go-to poster child for everything that ails us. What's your thoughts on that?
You know, everybody wants a threat because that's how the military-industrial complex survives.
Wow.
Without a threat, wow, there's no need for the deep state. And the deep state don't like that. NATO don't like that. The military complex there. Everybody has to find an enemy. Who's the best enemy we can go to? Russia. You know, they're who we don't spend a lot of time with. We don't know the reality. Russian doesn't like having his Putin doesn't like having his buttons pushed. So, hey, we'll utilize Russia. We'll utilize China economically. And we'll have a reason to be around. Because without a reason to be around, you know, we don't need to spend that kind of money. We don't need to be involved on the world stage. So they need an enemy. Russia's as good as anybody. It's one of the three world powers. So, hey, let's pick them.
Yeah. I hope everybody hears what you just said, because that is so accurate, what you say there. And that's really what is happening with Russia, people. I mean, they're not the big bad boogeyman. And I've told you that from day one. We should have an alliance with Russia. They should be at the table. We should be talking to them. We should be doing things with them. This is the wrong this wrong strategy that the world is playing against Russia. Tim, what do you think about NATO moving forward? I heard your earlier opinions when you talked about it, but NATO's going to be here, like it or leave it, and obviously you would leave it. But in the 21st century moving forward here, how significant will NATO be? What's the potential that we might be able to do with this? What do you see ahead here?
I don't think NATO's been significant for the last decade. And I see their role diminishing if Trump gets his way. Now, if something happens in the 2020 elections and our criminal Congress members get their way, you know, we'll go back to boosting up NATO because the deep state sees a reason for NATO as their pawn. Because we can get involved in world conflicts using NATO, saying NATO wants us here, we have to be here. And it's harder to justify to the American people if the world's not involved that we should get involved. So it really depends on how the elections go in 2020, what the role of NATO will be. I see it diminishing more if Trump stays in charge, and I see it growing back to what it was if Trump isn't.
Yeah, he's taken more and more of the power away from a lot of these global organizations, Dennis. Tim is exactly right. And you're right, though, when you look at what he's done in just the first couple, 2 to 3 years now, you know, imagine, I mean, if you do the multiplication of that, Dennis, and you say, okay, if he does get another 4 years plus what's left here, and Congress and the elections go a certain way, it could be a game changer, buddy, in the case of all this geopolitics here.
Oh, it's definitely a game changer. NATO is, it started off as being the vehicle for stabilizing the Cold War. In the last decade, the decade prior, NATO became the spirit of the coalition of the willing of the Bush, Clinton, Bush era, save the world from evil, global policeman policy that the United States, when it was the aggressive global policeman, was following. That era ended with the arrival of Barack Obama and is continuing to diminish under the stewardship of Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And so NATO is kind of like hanging on to this old global policeman role. That's the role that used to be played by the UN Security Council, but that's been turned into dust because of what happened in the UN General Assembly. Mm-hmm. So now they're using NATO as this place to go. But you know, NATO's got its own problems, man. You got like Erdogan over in Turkey. You know, he goes, "I will support defending Poland if you will declare every Kurd with a gun to be a terrorist." I mean, mm-hmm.
It's like he's a wild card. Erdogan's a wild card.
He's a nutball, is what he is.
Yeah. Well, in this whole strategy, and you've written about him, he is definitely a wild card. Let me tell folks and remind them right now as well. Very, very fascinating, interesting read on AmericaOutloud.com. Dennis's new column this week. NATO leaders wrestle with alliance's mission and commitment. It's right on the front page of America Out Loud, people. And take a look at that, read it, and understand what the stakes are, because there are some pretty significant stakes here involved in this. I think it is fascinating the way we are changing world politics in a very interesting way. The biggest problem we're going to have ahead, people, is not so much that, but it's how we're handling things here back home domestically that is creating a lot of our world relationships. As Tim was pointing out a moment ago, that's really going to be the linchpin in all of this. That's going to change a lot of these politics and will change the future of how things stack up, which reminds me to remind you how important these next elections are. Please make sure you're out there voting. Make sure you tell other people to vote and be part of the process. And as always, my encouragement to you would be to please vote to be a conservative patriot and bring back the framers' mission of what America is. It's a real simple process and a real simple goal with major ramifications here. Tremendous thank you here to Dennis Santiago, Tim Alders. What a great conversation about NATO. Up next, friends, I want to talk to you about criminal justice reform. There's a lot of stories that play into this, and many of them we are following on the platform here. And the big question people are asking is, are we safe as these politicians continue to want to play ping pong and letting all the criminals out on the streets? It gets real interesting just ahead here. Stay right there as Viewpoint rolls on.
We are the vision of the voices. You can email us at talk@AmericaOutloud.com.
Hello, this is Lieutenant Randy Sutton, the host of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I am a 34-year police veteran. I am also the founder and CEO of an organization that stands behind injured and disabled law enforcement officers. It is called The Wounded Blue. Our website is thewoundedblue.org. We have produced a film. It is an important film. I urge you to watch it. The film details what happens when a police officer or law enforcement officer is shot or stabbed or beaten or disabled, seriously injured in the line of duty. Most people think they are taken care of medically and financially. The reality may be quite different. It is called The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. The film is available on Amazon, iTunes, and the Microsoft Store.
Let's talk a little bit about criminal justice reform, people. There's a lot of crazy stories going on in this realm I want to talk to you about here. If you figure out in the past many days here and weeks here, we've had reports, you see this, of 3,000 sexual assaults from the Uber. Have you ever done one of those Uber drives? I've not used them before, but I know a lot of people who have. And there's another one called Lyft, in fact. And anyways, we'll touch on that. But more so, what about the early release of these criminals committing crimes within days of their release? You see New York City lawmakers wanting to release 80% of the prison population. You just can't make this stuff up, people. I mean, you wonder sometimes who are they in office for? Is it the criminal intent or is it the citizens who put them there? And of course, the bigger thing is, why do the citizens keep them there if they do these kinds of crazy things is the next thing. But what they're doing is they're wanting to end these cash bail programs, and it's opening up the more criminal intent to, you know, to go out there and recriminalize again, I guess, as though revandalize or whatever it is. Yeah, let's talk about that next here. Brooke Says is with us. Brooke is a political activist, a cultural impact specialist, a Patriot, a weekly columnist here at America Out Loud. Susan Price joins us. Susan's an investigative researcher, a patriot, a veteran advocate, Gold Star mother, and a great columnist. All three are great columnists. Ron Edwards, another great columnist. He's a talk show host. He does the 90-second spot, the Edwards Notebook you hear on America Out Loud. Love his voice, his opinions, his thoughts, and always a pleasure to have Ron, Susan, and Brooke join us here. Let's talk about some criminal justice reform. Brooke, I want to start with you. You have an article up that's called A Dystopian Left-Wing Ideology on Criminal Justice Reform. You say here, and so it is with the left's modern crusade for criminal justice reform, which focuses primarily on the incarceration of black people. You know, you can almost do this as a Christmas holiday thing, Brooke. I should do that again. Let me do that again. And so it is with the left's modern crusade for criminal justice. I feel like you want to be old Saint Nick when you say these things at this time of the year here. Anyways, Brooke, you go on to say the consequences, as is always the case, will hurt the very people they claim to care about. How come the left is never concerned about the victims of crime? That is the question you pose in the article, and it's a difficult question. I'd like to pose that same question back to you, if I might, Brooke. Why is the left never concerned about the victims of crime?
The criminals are now the victims, and the victims are now just selfish louts, as I put in there. They have in left-wing counties on the West Coast where you can't prosecute for theft under $950. So that's 2 weeks' pay for a lot of people.
So the lesson there is always steal about $800 worth, right?
No, but they literally bring calculators in to know how much they're going to steal because they know they're not going to be prosecuted.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That just steal around $800 and you're cool.
Yes, and so it sounds like, oh, you're being hyperbolic. It's actually true, and they're actually doing it. I mean, everything is upside down in many ways, but this is really sick. And one of the things that I say a lot, you know, and I frame it in the article, is it's a lot about white liberal guilt. You know, the foundation of that article is basically too many black people are in jail, and we had slavery, segregation, racism, Ku Klux Klan, etc., all which were Democrats, by the way, let us be clear. But that's basically what the premise is. So now it's a way for white liberals to feel good about themselves by letting black people out of jail, because that's their premise, that all people in jail are black. And so because they're in jail, none of them committed crimes, and let's let them out. Never mind, there's white people in jail, Hispanic people in jail, all kind of people in jail. But that's really, if you get down to it, that is really the premise.
Brooke, do you think they're doing that because that's a way to garner the black vote? Is that their answer?
Maybe it's part of it, but if they're, you know, a lot of states don't allow felons to vote. It's white liberal guilt, period, point blank, end of story.
Let me go to a gentleman now who I know for sure does not have white liberal guilt, because he's not a liberal, he's not white, and he certainly ain't guilty. Ron Edwards, pick up where Brooke is there and talk about this, Ron, please. Why is the left, why, that's their game plan, is it?
I'm just so thankful to hear what Brooke said. It's refreshing to finally hear white people that are not afraid to stand up for the truth and understand it's about principles. And it is true. These white liberals, they have ruined the earth, especially the United States of America. They coddle criminals of all races. And one thing that I've noticed, this is across the board, white liberals, whether it's in academia, whether it's in liberal churches or whatever, they promote the evil elements. They promote the knuckle draggers. And they put down achievers. They don't tell you about the Frederick Douglasses of the world, but they do promote and they want to put in your face the knuckle draggers, the criminals, the thugs. And how dare you come against these thugs, because if you do, you're evil and such and such and such. And they think that people are supposed to buy into this garbage. And this is part of the effort to simply overload our nation, overload our system, and just wear the people out. Fill the nation up with criminals, overburden us in so many ways. And I thank you, Brooke, for having the stones to say it like it is. This white guilt, it is horrendous.
Ron, what's the end game for them, do you think, here? What's the end game?
The end game is destruction of our society. The black criminals, the illegal border crossers, all these are part of an orchestrated effort to overload and to literally destroy this country from within. Wow. It's all part of destruction. It's evil.
Wow. I mean, I it's hard to top that, I have to tell you. That is in your face direct, but it's...
But it's also to make them feel good. It's to make white liberals feel good about themselves. That's the whole game.
I don't know. You wonder. It's kind of warped. It's all a little backwards. And you've been pointing that out in a lot of your write-ins here. Now, to keep the insanity going, bear with me a moment, Ron and Brooke, as I bring dear Susan Price into the conversation here. And let's keep the insanity going a moment, because, Susan, you have a very, very interesting read up on the platform that's entitled New York Gangbanger Lawmakers. Unleash new criminal justice reform. It will blow your mind. Susan Price, why will it blow our mind?
It'll blow your mind for a couple of reasons, but the system is rewarding criminals with New York Met tickets, movie passes, and shopping carts just to show up for trial. And it was snuck into their budget bill. So it's just insane.
Is this another de Blasio special, Susan?
Yes. Well, it is a Cuomo and de Blasio special. And like Brooke, I say it out loud the way that it is. I'm a former New Yorker and proud Floridian patriot. But I will tell you, this is has the fingerprints of George Soros thuggery written all over it. Be sure.
When you say former New Yorker, is that the same thing as a former drug addict or alcoholic, Susan?
Listen, I go through withdrawals every time I hear my family complain. And I say, well, you can always change things, get involved and advocate or move the hell out.
Well, that really is what a lot of people are questioning, that I always question. Why do they keep electing the same clowns to office? Which really, I mean, they're so saturated with their warped views that the only thing I can guess is they have their head in the sand and they're not paying attention.
Well, Malcolm, I will tell you, my family lives in Western New York. So the people in Western New York and upstate New York are paying the consequences for those in New York City, because New York City is saturated with gangbangers and illegals. And, you know, this is really sad because they're voting all these people in, and it's their votes are more than those voting more conservative.
All right, well, let me stay on this story here, and I want to punch over to Brooke a moment here. Brooke, the point of this program in New York by releasing the criminals, in your honest opinion here, is the point of the is it to make space? Is it to cut out political correctness? Is it racial and political motivation? What's behind all this in New York?
Well, I'm going to get redundant, and I might as well just say white liberal guilt and finish speaking, because basically that's what it is. Never mind you that it's also from the state or from the county commission that are doing these laws. They feel bad about a situation, but they don't know how to look at it logically and say, they're never going to look at any of their policies and see maybe there are reasons for a certain amount of criminality or a certain percentage disproportionate to the proportion in the population. Those are issues that are so deep. It's cancer. So what they want to do is they want to dress the wound. And this is how they think they're going to dress the wound. Democrat policies have created horrible situations in the black community. Okay. Everything was even in Jim Crow, Candace Owens talks about this, even in Jim Crow, the family situation was completely reversed. It was 27 or something percent of families. Black families were more likely to have the father in the home than white families were in like 1950 or 1940, even under Jim Crow. Now it's like 73 to 75% of all black children are born without a father in the home. What is the unintended consequence of that? These are all repercussions that have created horrible and devastating effects in the black community.
Well, let me do this. I want to ask you something, Ron. Earlier in the program, we were talking about the economy, and we were talking about, and part of that economic success in a big way is black America. The numbers are absolutely staggering. And we told everybody up front, we are talking people here, historical numbers we have never seen ever. Like not just in our lifetimes, listen to what I tell you, ever, like ever. There are more people working now in black America and Hispanic America and in all America than ever before. And as I shared those numbers with you earlier, I mean, 266,000 new jobs, 54,000 manufacturing jobs, 3.5 unemployment. And here's the kicker, 3.1% wage growth. We're talking across the board numbers we haven't seen. And numbers in these American communities like Hispanic America and Black America are significant. They are working. This has all got to have a major impact on things. And Ron, so here's when we talk about these crazy policies we're talking about, which I know, listen, you know, middle America is sitting home listening to these things and understanding what's happening here, which we're pointing out, and they're saying, well, what can we do about it? Ron, if we're going to talk about answers and solutions to the problems we're speaking about now, and as Brooke always says, the white liberal guilt or whatever the hell it is, I get that. But the only way we're going to impact change, I think, Ron, unless you have some other magic trick you're going to tell me about in a moment here, is through the process of an election. And until we get out and educate the people, because we've got to elect the right people to office in these local communities. And I'm talking local because local politics play into national politics and it all creates policy in our life. And isn't that the answer moving forward?
That's a major part of the answer. And we have to restructure how people are taught. One of the ways to reestablish all the things permanently that are good that you just mentioned, Malcolm, and many other things that we can all enumerate, we have to reestablish the family. We have to reestablish teaching children one generation after another the right things, not only morally, but concerning our country, economics, the whole nine yards, in order to keep this thing going. Because this isn't the first time we've had, at least in my lifetime, a period of very good prosperity and happy days are here again. When Ronald Reagan was in office, I got out of high school and all of that, and I thought the world was my oyster and it would be permanently this way, that Americans were thankful for what Ronald Reagan had done, and boy, it would just be great. Well, I learned the hard lesson that it wasn't so. So what we have to do is to lock this stuff in, mm-hmm. is to make sure that we reach our young. Part of the problem that is the reason why we've gotten the bad condition that we have, especially in the communities like the black community, is that we allow the white liberals to rule over our children through the government school system, which totally de-emphasized anything good, common sense thinking, real math, anything positive as far as education and moral thinking. It was destroyed in the government, white liberal run, school systems of America, because they, along with their guilt, have a mission to destroy or fundamentally transform this nation into something that is the opposite of what Trump has been trying to do and has been doing successfully, by the way. Yeah. And this is one of the reasons why he is so hated, because he has been a blessing. His policies have been a blessing to the not only the black population, but to the American population. All of us who want to partake of this great economy, the opportunities are there for you.
When you mentioned back with Reagan and in high school and all that, I got thinking right away, because those were very interesting, fond days for about any of us here that were young and innocent at that point, maybe, and thinking about that life would be that way and it would go on. But you know what's happened, Ron? And would you agree with this statement? That since those days of, as you just point out, with the Reagan days, let's call it here, the problem is we've had several decades, and we had four entrenched deep state administrations in a row. And I would say to you, do you agree with the statement? Bush, Clinton, Bush, Obama were four entrenched deep state political circles. Would you agree with that statement?
Yes, they were globalist in the whole nine yards.
I want to talk to you all briefly about Uber a moment. They were in the news in the last few days, guys. They reported more than 3,000 sexual assaults, and the year before, 6,000 sexual assaults. Many hundreds and hundreds of these are full-out rape. They have tried to spin it as good news, meaning that they've released their safety report and they're on it somehow. Listen, I've never done an Uber ride before. Susan, have you ever taken a ride in Uber? And what do you think about these assaults and problems with Uber?
I'm not an Uber fan, and I can see right through it. I don't want any part of it.
It sounds to me like it was a setup that was always going to go wrong.
Exactly.
When you have these people working in neighborhoods in your areas that many times are unchecked and unwarranted, and they're picking up young people in cars and stuff. I mean, there's a big risk with that, Brooke, don't you think?
Yeah, I'm with Susan. I don't take Uber or Lyft or any of that stuff. And I have taken it, I think, in D.C. maybe, but not alone.
Yeah, well, they were direct competition of the cab companies out there.
Yeah.
I don't know how this is going to play out, but Ron, would you put your daughter, if you have a young daughter, would you put her in an Uber?
No, I would not personally put her in Uber. But one thing that I do urge young ladies to do, which I did urge my daughter to do, and which she did do, she took self-defense classes, and she knows how to operate and owns a firearm. And she has her CCW, and she's well-equipped to take care of herself, whether it's in Uber or wherever. And I think that's what we need to emphasize to our young American ladies, to prepare for the worst, you know, and hopefully you don't ever have to, you know, participate in such an activity, but be prepared in that regard, because Uber is not the only place that scumbags will try to do these dastardly acts.
That's exactly it. Yeah, right. Absolutely here. Listen, friends, you're listening to the voice, the Ron Edwards, Brooke Says, Susan Price. What a program, what a day. Viewpoint this Sunday, friends. It's always good to be with you here. Again, it's a great time of year. I want to wish you and your family, your friends, a beautiful time. Merry Christmas. Happy holidays to all and whatever you celebrate in your life. The beautiful thing I always say about America is we're a diverse country with diverse people, and that's the beauty of this nation. It really is one nation under God, and it's a beautiful thing, people. I wish you the best always as we come through the holiday season here. There is a lot going on in the world. There's a lot going on in America, and there's a lot going on in your neighborhood. We'll stay up on all of it here at America Out Loud. Join me through the week on The Voice of a Nation, 6 p.m. Eastern Time. We'll see you back here next week on Viewpoint, and thank you again for being part of the journey here. As always, it's time to get involved and get loud.